This is Patty Daniels. I'm the executive producer of Vermont Edition, and you're listening to today's podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Lawmakers will be dealing with two big issues during their special veto session in late June: healthcare contracts for teachers and the legalization of the recreational use of marijuana. This week, Governor Phil Scott vetoed the marijuana bill, but he said he would sign a revised bill if the legislature made some changes to address his public safety concerns.
And I recognize there is a clear societal shift in that direction. However, I feel it is crucial that key questions and concerns involving public safety and health are addressed before moving forward. If they are willing to work with me to address my concerns in a new bill passed during the veto session this summer, there is a path forward on this issue.
How do backers of the legalization bill feel about these changes, and will lawmakers pass a revised bill next month? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman. David, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Bob. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you on. So let's start with the marijuana issue. After the governor vetoed that bill, you said that you were, quote, disappointed in that decision and that the governor had succumbed to misinformation about the legislation. Why do you feel that way?
Well, you know, we've been working through cannabis reform for, frankly, people have been interested for 80 years. But we've had a tremendous amount of propaganda and misinformation from when it was first made illegal through the Nixon years and the Nixon Commission that, again, suggested to Nixon that this was not the incredibly dangerous, harmful, problem-causing product that was believed by some. And he used it to actually suppress both the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement in the late 60s, early 70s. And we still are living with some of that misinformation today, whether it's secondhand smoke issues, where tobacco is many, many times worse, clearly proven to be incredibly harmful as a secondhand smoke situation. Cannabis, you'd have to be – the tests that they use, and you can see unfortunate videos of this online, show them literally just – pumping smoke directly into the face of monkeys and other primates nonstop, and said, oh, look, it causes a secondhand problem. Well, if any of us put our mouth over the tailpipe of a car or over anything of that nature, we would have a secondhand problem. And so some of these issues are certainly worth investigating and dispelling some of the myths that are out there. But to raise them at the 11th hour, or actually after 12 o'clock, as the governor did, is really unfortunate. We certainly, as you quoted, he said, if the legislature is willing to work with him. You know, the legislature was working on this legislation for the last 4 months. The House started right away. And the governor's folks were absent. It's not whether the legislature is willing to work with him. It's whether he's willing to have his staff actually present in the building, working on the policies as we go through them, rather than last minute as he did with teacher health care and now with this after the last minute.
So the governor says he wants to increase penalties for people who provide marijuana to minors and for people, as you were discussing, who smoke marijuana in a car with children present. Do you have a problem with either one of those?
No, certainly. I think actually most of the things he's brought up are reasonable things to look at and incorporate into a bill. Frankly, we could have done all of that come January in the next piece of legislation. The implementation date of this law was that the commission to look at a tax and regulate system would go into effect right away so they could propose language come January. But actually, the legalizing of home and personal use and production wasn't going to go into effect until July of 2018. So now by vetoing this, what he's actually done is delay the study commission to come up with language to address those issues in their tax and regulate bill or a standalone bill for that matter. And he's put in jeopardy the 2018 timeline for people to grow their own and have some at home. So what he's really put all of that in jeopardy because, frankly, passing a bill in the veto session, which is all of 2 days, will require numerous suspensions of the rules and procedural motions, some of which require three-quarters of the bodies to vote in favor of. Now, I think that's possible in the Senate based on some of the prior votes. In the House, given that there's a few Democrats who are not overly supportive of moving it forward too much, but in particular, only a couple of Republicans in the House willing to, I think getting to three-quarters of vote is going to take a lot of work on behalf of the governor, and it's going to rest on his shoulders and the House Republicans whether we move forward this year.
Well, here's some legislative reaction to the governor's approach. Let's hear first from House Judiciary Chairwoman Maxine Grad.
I do see that there could be a path, and I'm encouraged that he wants to work with us. I do think it's going to need all of us, all parties working together.
And Senate Judiciary Chairman Dick Sears, who's a strong supporter of the state regulatory approach, is optimistic about passing a bill in the special veto session.
You know, I was expecting just an out-and-out veto, so I'm actually pleasantly surprised to hear that there is a path forward.
Not everybody was pleased with the governor's possible support for a legalization bill. Here's House Minority Leader Don Turner, who says his caucus might use some legislative procedures to block final action on this bill during the special veto session.
My gut tells me that most of our members are opposed to legalization and will not be wanting to suspend rules.
So, Lieutenant Governor Zuckerman, if Representative Turner follows through with his threat to block consideration of the bill using some technical procedures, I've heard talk of people saying, let's put the marijuana bill on the state budget because the governor has said he will not block consideration of the state budget because he wants it to go into effect July 1st. Is that a possible strategy?
Well, that's actually the first I've heard of it. I appreciate the question and even the thought. I'm going to really leave that up to the legislative leaders, Senator Ash and Speaker Johnson, as to how they're going to proceed forward with the budget and various negotiations with the governor. And the idea of putting something this significant on the budget would be a little bit abnormal. But, of course, this is an abnormal situation. So I'm not going to jump into the middle of that fray. I do think we should move forward. You know, I will point out, two of the seven Republican senators voted for this legislation. And, you know, I think if the House Republicans want to stand in the way, then they can own that. They'll own it for better and for worse. And voters can communicate with their legislators because that's the political and democratic process. So I'm gonna see how this plays out. I think we do have a couple weeks for both advocates and Senator Sears and Representative Grad to work with the governor. I know that the governor met with some advocates today for the first time, again, 5 months, 6 months after the session starts. And most of the advocates are reasonably okay with the ideas that he's got as representatives of a lot of the public that support this. There's some issues with respect to civil rights, that smoke in a car, that smoke or smell could linger. So if someone has it on their clothing, you know, the jacket, they consumed cannabis the day before and then they get in the car the next day, there's some issues there with how law enforcement will interpret if someone has smoked in the car with their children. I think those are pretty important details to work out. But again, you know, you don't actually see people driving down the road with the windows rolled up with a car full of cannabis smoke. If anything, there's tobacco smoke involved far, far more. And there's also distracted driving with texting. Almost every day I see two or three, four people, if I'm out driving around, texting. So if we're really talking about highway safety, a tax and regulate law would give us more highway safety for all forms of protecting our drivers and our families on the road from either distracted driving or drunk driving or someone who's otherwise impaired.
So what's your strategy going to be on this bill between now and the start of the veto session? Are you going to work to try to address the governor's concerns so that something will pass in June?
Well, absolutely. I think Senator Sears and Representative Grad have already started meeting with each other. And I think Senator Benning as well, who's been a strong proponent, meeting with the governor's folks along with these various advocates. I'll participate where wanted and where necessary, but I trust a lot of their work to incorporate many of his concerns. I think the makeup of the commission, for instance, he wanted a couple more folks on there. That's, I think, perfectly reasonable. So I think there is a reasonable path forward. The difficulty will be whether or not the governor can get House Republicans to suspend the rules. And he may use that as leverage to get everything he wants in there. I think, as I said, some of the things he's asking for have already been addressed with facts and research. But if he needs them in there to be, again, exposed for the general public to know again that some of the concerns are not as sort of realistically being borne out. If you look across the country, the statistics are very clear. States with medical cannabis and recreational cannabis or high use of cannabis, whether neither of those are the law, actually on average have lower highway fatality rates than states that don't have cannabis laws. That is not a causation. I'm not going to go there with respect to it being a causation. But for those who are sort of stating there's this massive danger out there, I think if there was a massive danger, it would be borne out by those statistics being different, and they're not. So go ahead, work with him, and try to get something in front of those House Republicans and see what they'll do.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Brad, who's calling from Stowe. Hey, Brad, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to be a part of the program. I have a brief question. I've read an article in the New York Times that showed that there have been some significant decreases in worker productivity in Colorado since the legalization of cannabis. And I'm wondering if the lieutenant governor has any concerns about how it could affect our economy here in Vermont, in both the short term and long term. And I'm talking about the economy that is not related to the cultivation and sale of cannabis.
Sure, that's a fair question. I hadn't seen that article. I'm interested in the data and that information. There's no doubt that consuming anything, whether it's alcohol that can reduce your productivity, not necessarily, obviously, we don't want anybody to be consuming alcohol or cannabis at work, but either one of those consumed too often, or if someone is got an addiction, certainly can affect their productivity. So that's worth looking at and reviewing. There's no doubt that in the Tax and Regulate Commission, they'd be looking at those kinds of issues with respect to a system here. I will have to say with respect to the economy, it is broader and it is both. In fact, the cannabis economy itself is one piece, but frankly, there's a lot of ancillary economic benefit as well. You would have increased skier visits. It would be the hospitality industry. We've certainly been very, very highly supportive of our artisanal beer industry here in Vermont. And there's no doubt that alcohol has negative ramifications in society. But that's been a tremendously positive economic circumstance for Vermont and brought people to Vermont. And I think the same could be true with cannabis. But I think you're raising a fair question, and we need to make sure we address that.
Right now, we're going to talk to Caledonia Senator Joe Benning is on the line. Senator, welcome to the program.
Hi, and good afternoon, Bob. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi, Joe.
Senator, what can you tell us about the governor's approach to this issue and whether or not it's likely there might be a compromise in the June session?
Well, I want to start by saying the bill that he vetoed was calling for legalization in the summer of 2018. There was always a belief that there would be a commission involved first in bringing all of the elements into what we need to discuss and consider prior to that happening. I'm a little bit more optimistic than the lieutenant governor, apparently, because I still think we are on schedule. We may not be able to resolve it in a two-day veto session. But the parties are close enough in the conversation that I think it can happen right away if we return back in January, if that's when we have to wait to have something happen. There has been very good conversation going on between the chairs of the House and Senate Judiciary Committees and the administration. I was party to that yesterday. I had previously asked the governor's counsel to outline specifically what it was that the governor was looking for. And when I read the provisions, I did not see those provisions as unreasonable or unreachable as far as legislation is concerned. Mm-hmm. So I remain very optimistic, and I want to make sure that this conversation today ends on a positive note, that we actually have the House, the Senate, and the administration all in sync with the idea that legalization can happen. It's just a question of tweaking how to make it work and work right, which is really what we have all been trying to do from day one on this issue.
So, Joe, you talked about some outstanding issues that might be difficult to deal with in a two-day veto session. What are those issues that still need to be resolved?
Well, the first problem is the budget is going to be the major topic of discussion. That is by far and away the most important issue that the state has in front of it, and that has to take a front seat to anything else we talk about. The second problem is, if we are there for only 2 days, the realistic possibility of getting the House to go along with a rules change, it's a very difficult obstacle in front of us. I don't think it's going to happen, quite frankly. If there's another vehicle that could be used to get through that process, that might be a way around it. But the nutshell is there are other things that are going to take a front seat to this issue, and I'm questioning whether we can manage to get this accomplished in a two-day session. On the other hand, I do believe the parties, that is, those folks who are working on the judiciary committees and the administration, will be able to come to terms well in advance of that date and have conversation about what kind of legislation we can actually pass. So whether it happens in June or it happens in January, I think we are still on schedule for a summer legalization of 2018.
Senator Joe Benning, many thanks for calling in today.
Have a great afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you, Joe. And I generally agree with you. There's no doubt, obviously, the budget is the number one priority in the veto session. But where things change if we do this in January with a law versus having had it gone into effect this summer with the commission looking at a proposal for legislation throughout the fall, we would hit the ground running in January with ideas and the issues that we need to resolve around a tax and regulate system. And I would hope if we are unable to succeed in some sort of veto policy that goes through that the governor's on board with. And again, I agree with Senator Benning. I think there is a path forward there in terms of all parties coming to agreement. But for the timeline, and Senator Benning pointed that out, that difficulty, that instead we'll be starting to talk about these issues again in January. So I would hope the governor would work with the leadership of the Senate and the House to put together a committee, even without legislation, to look at tax and regulation so that we'd be ready to really talk about that in January and work with the legislature starting in January instead of waiting till the end of the session.
Let's talk to Naomi, who is calling from Moncton. Hi, Naomi. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to talk about the larger context, which is Jeff Sessions' renewal of the war on drugs. I'm very concerned about it for lots of reasons, but one of the big ones, of course, is the disproportionate way that African Americans are penalized for drug usage and imprisoned. And I think that any positive message or any message we can send about decriminalizing drugs to Washington, I think is important, and I think it needs to be done sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Naomi. I agree completely. Really, the war on drugs has been really a war on people of color. People of color, when it comes to any number of drugs throughout the war on drugs, whether it was cocaine and crack, which had a disproportionate effect that they targeted crack more than cocaine, even though there was really very little difference in the two of them with respect to the harms they do. Both do serious harms, but one was a wealthier, whiter, drug of choice, and crack was the less expensive version. So the war on drugs has been an assault on our community of color. And even in Vermont, we did pass H-308 commission to look at the issues of criminal justice reform and so forth. Right now, statistically, 1 in 14 African-American males are incarcerated in Vermont. And the ratio of people of color, black folks to white folks incarcerated in Vermont is 10.5 people of color to every one white person of color relative to population. And so, you know, we clearly have a disproportionate issue going on there, and I agree with you completely. Attorney General Sessions is really going back to the dark ages on facts and policy, which is true of, frankly, much of the Trump administration, where they're just shooting from the hip and going with old policies that are completely debunked with respect to actual public safety. And that's very unfortunate.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman. Dave, let's talk about the statewide teacher health care contract that the governor has been proposing. It's another key issue of the veto session. The governor wants to basically say, let's have a statewide teacher health care contract. It will reduce property taxes by $25 million, ensure that all teachers have the same health care policies. What do you think of this idea?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important to clear up some facts. The governor put out there this beautiful diamond of $25, $26 million in property tax savings, and that's what everybody is fixated on. But when you actually look at the details of his proposal, and we have a statement from the from Legislative Council, who are lawyers who really look at what the bills are and what the language would do, they indicate there's really no assurance of that kind of money and that kind of savings. And ultimately, the longer we go, that's also decreased as more teachers settle contracts throughout the summer as we move forward. So first, it's important to make sure that the facts are clear for the listeners that there really was not $26 million. And then even in the half year of the overlap of the state budget and the calendar year, there's not even $13 million because those savings were not necessarily recaptured for property tax savings. A lot of people got upset with the Senator Ash and others' proposal, but it was actually the only proposal that guaranteed that savings made would be returned to taxpayers. And I think that's important to point out. Process is also really important. Again, just like cannabis, the governor came to the legislature with actual proposal, not just an idea, but written out proposal, with just a week or two, I think 2 weeks left in the session. You know, if the governor came to the legislature with 2 weeks left and said, actually, I'm going to eliminate Vermont Housing Conservation Board and put that money towards tax reduction, everybody would say, are you crazy? We can't do a major policy change that's going to affect thousands of Vermonters with housing or land conservation without really looking at the details and understanding what the ramifications would be for the future of Vermont. I think the same can be said here. There are serious ramifications, whether it be not just to what teachers' benefits are. I think a lot of people are attacking teachers for their pay and benefits, but it goes beyond that. If we had statewide teachers' health benefits and potentially future statewide teachers' contracts, would that actually cost us more? Because I don't see teachers in those districts getting paid a little better where the cost of living is also higher, suddenly saying, oh yeah, we'll take a $10,000 pay cut so that there's a statewide average of the rural areas. All of a sudden, this might actually cost Vermonters more. So what is the path we're heading down? And also, you know, the idea of just passing something last minute without looking at those details, there's legal questions. Would this be negotiated with the various different unions in schools? We've heard a lot of talk about the teachers union, but there's other unions in the schools that do other aspects of schoolwork that would be brought in under this healthcare plan. It may well be a good idea, but if you're negotiating with three or four different unions, what if one union agrees and two unions don't? Well, how does that work with a single contract? How do teachers work with their school boards if they're going to negotiate with one negotiating partner, which is the governor, on teachers, on health care, and then turn around and negotiate with their school boards on salaries and other benefits? Will that put the school boards at an advantage or a disadvantage? There are a lot of questions, and that's the bottom line with his proposal, is you can't come up with something this significant, changing policy, with a week or two left in the session, having not really flushed out the thoughts and the ideas. So that's a concern I have. I do hope that some kind of middle ground can be found. But part of that is a negotiation partnership. And my understanding is the House and Senate leadership regularly went to the governor with moving towards his ideas, trying to incorporate the parts that would work logistically, and saying, if you don't like this, come up with another counter proposal. And he never really did come up with concrete on paper proposals, because when you actually look at it on paper, it starts to fall apart. So if he's ready to come with some proposals that are actually on paper and real and work to the middle ground with leadership, then I think we can get somewhere.
Oh, I want to ask you about that possible resolution of this issue, because House Speaker Mitzi Johnson had a plan to leave the collective bargaining process at the local level. It also placed some parameters on the benefit package for teachers. Vermont NEA, the state's teachers union, strongly opposed this idea. So where's the middle ground on this issue?
Well, I think part of the middle ground was in the final proposal we passed that, of course, he vetoed, which was to say, okay, if it's because of a drop-dead date, which has been talked about, this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity because all the contracts are going to be negotiated at the same time, we said, okay, let's say as of 2000, I think it was December of 2018, or maybe it was 19, I don't recall which, but that's negotiable, we would create a new date like this one where we could have next year to go through the process with the education committees, with the labor committees, with the various stakeholders, the school boards associations, the superintendents associations, the teachers, the other unions, and say, what is a process we can work out so that as of that date, we're ready to come up with a proposal that will work? Again, the Vermont way is to bring everybody to the table and have a conversation, not bring everybody to the table and tell them how it's going to be. And that's what happened here. So part of a compromise can be setting a new date and moving it out 1 year so we can do this in a thoughtful, methodical Vermont way.
What would happen to all the contracts that are settled in the next 3 or 4 months?
Well, there's a couple things. Again, anything that's settled before we pass a new bill, that's contract law. We can't change that. However, any that weren't yet settled, we could say, do your health care portion of this contract or the whole contract to end on that date in the end of the year 2018 or 2019. So we can put some parameters around the contracts that are still being negotiated. We just can't change the ones that have been. But we could then say going forward, those that were settled need to fall within these parameters when they expire for the next round.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much. And thank you, David, for being on.
Thank you, John.
I think the problem here is that many of us in Vermont feel there is a property tax crisis and that people are just taxed out and feed out. The fact is that here is a unique opportunity that the governor is right to bring up, and it's something that can't be pushed off for years. The Senate passed budget increased property taxes by moving the teachers' retirement fund from the general fund to property taxes. The big dog in this is the Vermont NEA, and they're in intransigence not to go to statewide negotiations, which would save tons of money. You know, the Vermont NEA has 7 field negotiators. They pay over $1 million in salary and benefits to negotiate with local school boards. School boards, teachers, administrators spend tons of time that they could be putting into the kids in negotiating over health contracts that realistically all teachers deserve the same good health benefits throughout the state. This is, I think the governor's right on this. And I think I think the timing is just a false thing.
All right, John, we appreciate your phone call. Let's get a perspective from Bill in Hinesburg. Hi, Bill. What are your thoughts?
Hey, Dave. It's your neighbor, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, so here's the real situation. Is the teachers do get the same health care contract statewide. Okay, I'm a former school board member. So what happens is the teachers can all get in a room and they can decide what they want to negotiate. The school boards, I can't as a school board member in Hinesburg talk to a school board member in Essex. They file agreements against us for unfair labor practices. My point is the DMV workers don't negotiate separately from the folks who work for the Agency of Natural Resources. The playing table's not fair. We can't negotiate the same way that the teachers can. So a statewide negotiated health care contract is the way to go. And that way, everyone throughout the state is paying the same amount of contribution to the health care plan. Those are my thoughts.
All right, Bill, thanks very much for your phone call. David, are you basically saying that the idea might have some merit, but it's going to need more study and perhaps have a delayed implementation date?
Well, two things. The idea may have merit, but the other part of the idea in Vermont is that everybody comes to the table to talk about these kinds of shifts and ideas, and that is not what the governor did. And yes, it may flush out as a reasonably good idea, but with some adjustments. Like I said, there's numerous different unions that work in the schools. So what if some unions agree and some don't? What if this all of a sudden leads to difficulties for school boards on the pay side, where in some districts folks support higher pay and other districts they don't, and all of a sudden with the statewide, some of the benefits costs go up? And I will say to the first caller, I appreciate the property tax crisis. There was legislation introduced that would have lowered 70% of Vermonters' taxes for property taxes by $40 million by making income sensitivity across the board so that wealthy Vermonters also paid based on income. Because right now, wealthiest Vermonters actually pay a much lower percentage of their income towards our school funding than do average Vermonters like, I believe, both callers and myself, where we're income sensitized, anybody with under about $130,000 in income. So that's one proposal. The other proposal actually was the governor's proposal in his budget, which was to shift $50 million of, I believe, $35 to $50 million of expense onto the Ed Fund. So when the caller said the Senate moved $9 million over, first of all, we had a carry forward, which again is only a one-year coverage for that. But $9 million, if we're frustrated about that, the governor's budget was $35 to $50 million. I'm just not recollecting which one of those it was, and I apologize. That's a significantly larger tax shift onto the property tax. So if we're going to be saying this is an issue, we need to make sure everybody holds accountable all the different proposals. And I will say, I know that people pick on our teachers for the circumstances and the pay they get. Fair enough. I was at my daughter's recital two nights ago, choral recital. The eighth graders were getting recognized by the teacher because they were graduating. And one of the eighth graders stepped forward and said, you know, I want to thank my teacher, I won't put names out there, for helping me by getting me the shirt and the pants I needed to be able to be in this recital because we didn't have the right clothing for the recital. Teachers clothe children in our schools. Teachers provide notebooks and pens and paper and other things when the school budgets are coming up short. So I think it's really important that the full story be told. That doesn't mean I'm carrying the water for the teachers. Maybe a statewide contract is the way to go on healthcare, but we've got to have all of these discussions out in the open. And that's how we do it in Vermont, not at the last minute. And yes, people are strapped. That's why we passed a budget with no tax increase. I appreciate the governor's leadership on that. I also appreciate the work of the House and Senate and the prior governor over the last few years, setting up an economy where we were making savings in Medicaid and Medicare that allowed a budget to come in level. These things are not all of a sudden flip a coin situations. We have, thankfully, one of the lower unemployment rates in the country. Doesn't mean it's a perfect economy, but all of these things are moving in the right direction.
David, we also got this email in from Brian, who said, will you consider running against Phil Scott?
I just came in this morning from transplanting sweet potatoes and melons in the fields, and I'm pretty busy right now to be contemplating who's running for governor. It's really premature. I think everybody was tired of a year-plus campaign last time. I think it's premature for anybody to be talking about running for governor at this point.
David Zuckerman is Vermont's lieutenant governor. David, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.